This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Jack Roslevic, he hustles to center, across the line, shooting, stop, rebound, and it's tapped out in front of the backhand shot by Cobb. They score! Andrew Cobb with a huge goal! And right off the rush, off a face-off win by Winnipeg, they regain the lead. It's 3-2 for the Jets, baby!
From Thursday night in the Show Me State, the Jets showed just enough to get a victory, an all-important victory over the St. Louis Blues, their second win over the Blues in a five-day span. Decent week for the Winnipeg Jets, 2-0-1 in three Central Division games. More of that needed for this team to get back into a playoff spot, but a good week nonetheless. Good morning, universe. Let me try that again. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. It's a game day. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Ottawa Senators 6 hours from now at Bell MTS Place, the start of a crucial six-game homestand for the Winnipeg Jets. We're all about the Jets this morning alongside Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezzy, good to see you. Welcome back from your sojourn south of the border. I hope you had an enjoyable vacation.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Happy birthday. It's our 11th birthday today.
It's our 11th anniversary today. Is it a birthday or an anniversary? Were we married or were we born?
That's a good question. I look at it kind of like both, right? Like, I feel like when we started the show back in, what was it, 2009, 2020 minus 11.
Yeah, simple
makes
math.
It 2009.
Yeah.
So I feel like me, you, Rich.
Who?
We got to throw Remus in there as well because he was part of the show in the beginning.
We don't have to.
So it was kind of like a marriage of sorts, but it's also kind of like a birthday, right? Because our first show, of course, was February 4th, 2009.
Yeah.
And it's February 8th, but we didn't have a show, you know,
on February 4th.
On February 4th, obviously. So I think it's a birthday and an anniversary.
Fair enough. Well, happy birthday-versary to you as well, then. Exactly. Illegal Curve Hockey, Illegal Curve Radio, celebrating 11 years on Winnipeg airwaves this Saturday morning. Will we make it to 12? Well, never really quite sure if we'll make it to the end of one show. Never mind next week's show and next year's show. In any event, welcome back to the program. Big week for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, the Jets were all over the news. We'll talk about the Dustin Byfuglien situation, of course, throughout the course of this first hour. But on the ice, you knew it was an important week. You knew that the four games coming out of the All-Star break and coming out of the bye week were going to be crucial. And it started last Friday, where they had that disappointing home loss to the Boston Bruins, where a game that they very easily could have, you know, they played one of their better efforts of the entire year and didn't have anything to show for.
Yeah, they could have easily got at least a point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They had nothing last Friday.
Right.
They come back last Saturday, a week ago today, and they take care of a St. Louis Blues team on home ice in a huge win. Absolutely massive win. And then on Tuesday night, you have the Nashville Predators, and we know that the Jets and the Preds are tooth and nail. They're fighting. Both teams have had disappointing years, but they're absolutely scrapping to get back into a wild card spot. The Predators, of course, you know, 1 point behind the Calgary Flames for that final wild card spot with two games in hand. The Jets tied with the Predators. The Preds do have those games in hand, like I said, though. So you knew that Tuesday game was going to be a massive game, and the Jets come out on the short end of a 2-1 overtime defeat. And you're thinking, okay, you know, right now, coming out of the break, you're 1-1-1. And you've lost another game on home ice. You won on Saturday. You lost on Tuesday. You got to go to St. Louis on Thursday to wrap up this very difficult, pretty difficult four-game stretch. And on Thursday night, it was almost like a tale of two games for the Jets. They take the 2-0 lead, and up to that point in time, I thought they'd been playing a pretty good road hockey game. There were chances at both end, and Connor Hellebuck was, you know, as good as he needed to be so far this season for the Jets to be in a game. And then something flipped after that 2-0 goal by Laine, where he sort of flubs the shot and still gets the goal. The Jets were just on their heels for the remainder of the second period and for a sizable chunk of the third period. And you're thinking, you know, there's the Parayko goal, and then there's the Edmondson goal from the point. Not Edmondson. Who scored the second goal? I'll think about it. Gunnarsson scored the second goal. And
I couldn't remember.
Okay,
so
yeah, and we both have young children. It's hard enough that we remember to be here on a Saturday morning. But Andrew Kopp's goal in the third period,
yep,
to give the Jets that 3-2 lead was absolutely massive. They're able to hold on thanks to a tremendous performance by Connor Hellebuyck. But that win, to be able to say you took the 2 out of the 3 games, you took 5 out of the 6 points against the Central Division teams, and you start this 6-game homestand against teams that are not in playoff spots. That win on Thursday night, had they lost on Thursday night, had they completely collapsed after the 2-goal lead, I don't know that this 6-game homestand would matter. It would matter, obviously, but I'm not sure that they would really have the momentum going into it, and I'm not sure they would have been able to flip the switch. But that win on Thursday night, I think, gives them such a boost, or should give them such a boost, entering the 6-game homestand where play well, and you're going to be right into the thick of it after the trade deadline.
Okay, I agree with you. That win was huge, but let's slow down for a second and go back to, you mentioned Jansen Harkins gets the first goal for the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Laine scores the second goal. Let's just go back to the Jansen Harkins goal for a second, because to me, that goal was symbolic, because Harkins is a guy that's kind of, you know, Dave Minuch has been, you know, praising Harkins all year long, and he's kind of that forgotten guy of the 2015 draft, right? We
sure
know about all the guys that are currently in the Jets lineup from that 2015 draft. Obviously, you know, Connor and Roslovic at the top of that draft class, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that goal to me was symbolic, because all season long we've talked about how the Jets have struggled to get goals from the third and fourth lines, right? And Jansen Harkins gets that goal, and then, as you mentioned, Andrew Kopp, pardon me, gets that third goal, and obviously that was a grinder goal.
Yeah.
I mean, that was not a nice goal, but the Jets don't care at this point. But getting back to what you said about the couple of wins over the Blues, and specifically the last game, I mean, the Jets are going to be very hard-pressed to catch the Blues. They're not catching the Blues.
They're probably not catching
the Avalanche unless there's some kind of crazy winning streak for the Jets and some type of crazy losing streak for either the Blues or the Avalanche. So right now, the best the Jets can do...
Or the Avalanche or the Stars more than the Blues even.
Sure,
yeah.
But the point is the Jets are playing for a wild card spot, or they're playing for third in the Central. So that win is huge, and you're right, Drew. I mean, the Jets go up 2-0 in that game, and the Blues didn't just have a pushback. It was a massive pushback, and when you consider that game was tied, not only were the Jets in danger of not getting any points in that game, I mean, the Jets were in danger of, I mean, they were in a position to really close that game out, and they didn't play very well towards the end of the second period. The third period was all the Blues, and Connor Hellebuyck, again, mm-hmm, I believe, stole that game. And that's what the recipe for success for the Jets has been for the majority of the year, minus, obviously, you know, getting goals from the Scheifele line and the Wheeler line, right? So you're getting a lot of production now from your third line, and you're going to get healthier, you know, later on in the homestand. But, you know, right now, for Paul Maurice to be able to rely on Andrew Kopp and Jack Roslovic and Jansen Harkins on that third line, and they didn't just have one good game against the Blues, that first game at home against the Blues, that line was excellent. So I thought that was very impressive. I think Sammy Niku, to me, has had a very good last stretch of games coming out of the All-Star break. And yeah, when you look at the standings, they're very close. And I know you want to get into the standings a little bit later in the show, and I did a little bit of math yesterday, and then I revised it because the playoff line, it looks like it's going to be closer to 91 or 92 points. But the point is, these points are so important right now. And you're right, Drew. If you don't get 2 points there, or even a point, if you get a point there, I mean, this is going to come back to haunt them. And when you talk about, you know, these last 4 games coming out of the break, they get 5 of a possible 8, mm-hmm, and they easily could have gotten a point in that Nashville game.
Yeah. Oh, no, in the Boston game.
Pardon me, in the Boston game, because obviously they lost in overtime. They could have easily got 6 of 8. So when you're looking at it, you're saying, the teams we played, I mean, these are all good teams. I mean, especially when you're talking about St. Louis and Boston. Nashville, they're a borderline playoff team right now. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about St. Louis and Boston, I mean, the Boston game to me was almost the most impressive game. Tuukka Rask was excellent in that game. I really liked the way the Jets played, especially defensively. So when you look back at it, that game might have been the game that I liked the best out of these four. But absolutely, the 2 wins over the Blues are crucial, because now you have the 6 games at home coming up against teams that most of them you should beat. The only team really that maybe you're a little bit worried about is Chicago, because they've already beat you this year.
But, well, that Chicago game is massive.
But the Jets are a better team than Chicago. I don't care what anybody says. But the point is, you're not playing St. Louis and Boston. You're playing all teams that are non-playoff teams.
Well, what's you know, in addition to the, you know, the standings and what the records show over the last four games, I think the Jets' performance on the ice, in terms of the whether it be the eye test or whether you look at the numbers, the advanced stats, is that the performance is more equitable to their opponents. They're not, you know, with their expected.
Yeah, these were all close games.
Well, their expected goals for isn't bottoming out like we saw through the month of January and through the month of December, where the team has no chance and basically any victory or any point that they get is more fluky than it is performance based. If you look at the numbers and you look at the performance over the last four games, it's been more 50-50.
Well,
it's
been more even. Having said that though, Drew, I mean, they're still not scoring as many goals as you would like. I mean, you know, you take out the empty net goals.
Sure.
I mean, how many goals did the Jets score in these four games? What did they have, six or seven?
Well, they had two empty nets against the Blues or on last Saturday and one on Thursday against the Blues. So three empty net goals, if I'm not mistaken.
So they had seven or eight goals, like non-empty net goals.
Right. Look,
I'm just saying, like, I mean,
they're not an offensive juggernaut, but if you look at it, I mean, they're not, you know, they were so bad. We had Sean Tierney on during the All-Star break, and we were talking about just the Jets' performance and, you know, they were otherworldly bad in terms of their advanced analytics. And the last four games, and I know it's only been four games, so small sample size and everything else, they haven't been, they've been more 50-50. They've been more even.
Yep.
And their expected goals for has been better than their opponents in, I believe, all four of those games that they've played. So that, you know, they didn't win all four games, certainly, but their expected goals for is something more reasonable than they had been getting before. It's something that's more emblematic of a team that is fighting for a playoff spot than it is a team that's sort of holding on to being in the playoff discussion, and they're doing it by smoke and mirrors. So that, to me, is almost as important as the results, is that the game flow and the performance is better than it has been earlier in January and in December. And that is, I think, something that the Jets can sort of, you know, hold on to as hope and as a sign that maybe things are improving. And I want to say things are improving because I think there's been a shift. I think the Jets have made a tweak. And I don't obviously know this for certain, but it does seem that all year long, when they've been so passive with their defense, and they're saying to their defense, you know, hang back and sort of throttle down your engines. And they're saying that to a lot of their players, to hang back and to throttle down your engines. I think you're seeing a shift. I think that the reins have been loosened because somebody, presumably Paul Maurice, has realized sitting back is not doing any good. You're not going to win anything sitting back like they had been in the defensive shell. They weren't good enough to play that kind of hockey. So let your horses run a little bit. The defense has been more active at the offensive blue line, certainly trying to keep pucks in, similar to the style of play we saw last season. So I that's something I'm watching closely, game in, game out, to see if that's an aberration or if that's something that they want to continue with over the next six, nine games, you know, right up until the trade deadline. And then you're obviously going to see, you know, has the team made it or is the team broken at that point in time?
Going back to what you said about, you know, having hope for the playoffs and having hope with this homestand coming up. I mean, the hope is that you're going back to what we said, you're playing teams that are non-playoff teams, but the Jets have played better against the elite teams in the NHL. Think about St. Louis, you think about Boston, you think the Jets beat Tampa Bay earlier this year.
They certainly played down to the level of their competition.
Right. So that's what's going to be interesting to me coming up, is you have games coming up against teams that you should beat, especially Ottawa. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can sit here all we want and talk about how much better the Jets are than the Hawks. And I do think the Jets are better than the Hawks, but the Hawks still have Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Robin Lehner and Alex DeBrincat. Like, the Hawks are only 1 point behind the Jets, right?
With a game in hand.
Right? So throw that out the window. Because
everybody in the West is, sorry, Ezzy, but the West is pretty bad.
Well, there's a lot of parity in the West. I think if you look at the bad teams in the East, they're worse than the bad teams in the West. But I agree with you. The West is not very good. Basically, you know, you've got the St. Louis Blues maybe as the only elite team. Like, mm-hmm. I still think the Blues, the Avalanche, and probably I'd still throw in the Golden Knights are the three best teams in the West. But the Pacific Division is wide open. Like, anybody can take it. Vancouver, Vegas, Edmonton, like Arizona. I mean, specifically the Pacific. But yeah, I agree. The West is not as good as it has been. Certainly, it wasn't as good as it was a couple of years ago when you had, you know, the Jets and the Predators, you know, competing for the President's Trophy. But, you know, I think you make an interesting point as well when you talk about a little bit of a shift in style for the Jets, because it's a function of the teams they're playing. And we know that St. Louis is a much different team than Boston, but both of these teams have that physical kind of grinding element to them. And you've seen this year that the Jets have obviously sacrificed offense for defense. I mean, and you just don't have the same guys. You don't, you mentioned, you know, you don't have the horses that you had last year. You don't have Dustin Byfuglien. You don't have Jacob Trouba. Even a guy like Tyler Myers, people forget, like, he was a guy that used to jump into the play. So Sammy Nikku has obviously helped that. And that's why I mentioned earlier in the show, you can see Nikku has got much more comfortable in the Jets lineup. The first two, three, four games, you know, he was called up from the Moose. You could see that he was a little bit rusty when it comes to the NHL game. He's a very talented defenseman, but it had been a long time since he had played for the Jets. And obviously, you know, he got into the lineup for the Moose and was having success. But I think there's no doubt that the Jets have to turn it up a little bit. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, the games against Nashville and Boston, you know, you only get a couple of goals. And they're still, I don't think, like, look at Mark Scheifele, maybe take Patrick Laine out of it, but, you know, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Blake Wheeler.
They're struggling a little bit.
These guys have not been tearing it up coming out of the break, and they're going to get their goals. And I wouldn't be surprised if Scheifele, Connor, Wheeler, all of these guys get on the board this afternoon versus Ottawa. But you're right, Drew. I mean, when you've got all of these points on the line, you've got the playoffs on the line. Mm-hmm. Like, I agree. This is make or break. Like, and again, I know you want to get a little bit more deep into it later, but I don't think anything but four of six games. You have to win minimum four of these six, and preferably you want to win all of them. But I think it's very realistic to expect. I don't think it's very realistic to expect the Jets to win all six, but I do think it's realistic to expect them to win five.
You know, we'll talk more about the upcoming schedule later on in the program, but this is make or break. This is crunch time. This is it right now. This six-game homestand plus the three games on the road right afterwards against non-playoff teams as well. The next nine, the only one that might be against a playoff team is Philadelphia's game, because they're sort of bouncing in and out of that wild card spot in the East. These next nine games make or break the Jets season, no question about it. And we'll talk more about that throughout the course of the program. When we come back, the drama about Dustin seems to be coming to an end. Dustin Byfuglien and the Winnipeg Jets headed for mutual termination of his contract. We talk about Buff for the next little while. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Selfishly, yeah. The love and respect, I think, that I have for him, it's kind of the overriding emotion now after kind of going through a range of emotions all season. You know, you don't know what you have till it's gone. You know what I mean? And shoot, we miss that guy.
Jets captain Blake Wheeler. People have been waiting to hear his comments regarding Dustin Byfuglien and the mutual termination of his contract, Byfuglien's contract. He finally spoke to the media Thursday in St. Louis, was effusive in his praise for Dustin Byfuglien. Talked about how much the team misses him, how important, how significant of a figure he was.
Good on Blake Wheeler for speaking for that long. Like, and you mentioned it, Drew. I mean, people wanted to hear Wheeler weeks before, maybe not weeks before, let's say a week before.
You know,
but good on him. He sat there and he answered all of the questions.
You know what my problem, and this is more of a sausage making issue than it is his comments. His comments were perfectly fine. I have no problem with his comments. It drives me crazy that they waited until the Jets were in St. Louis to have him address the issue. Because you knew, like, you know.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting to, right?
Yeah, I know.
Mean, you wanted to hear him after practice.
You wanted to hear him on Tuesday after practice.
Right.
And then you wanted to hear him on Wednesday after practice. And it took until Thursday. And this is, I mean, you can go back through my Twitter feed if you want. And I predicted that it played out exactly as I said it was going to. That people are waiting.
You're basically an oracle.
Yes, I am. That's clearly what I am. I'm from a different, I'm a visionary.
Drew the Oracle Mandel.
There you go. But it just drives me a little bit nuts that they waited until Thursday on the road to have him address the issue than have him on Tuesday or Wednesday. But that's my problem and I can deal with it on my own. I think he should have been one of the first to speak, not one of the last to speak. But again, like I said, this is my issue and my issue only.
I don't think he said anything that was earth shattering. Like,
no, of course not.
Like, I realize that here in Winnipeg, and you know, we do the radio show, we're in the media, we go to the games. So, well, I go to less games than I used to now. Yeah, with two kids.
It's your own fault for having
two
kids.
I used to go to, you know, the majority of games. Dave Minuk is obviously representing us well at both Jets and Moose games, but
pretty sure he lives there.
Oh yeah, he lives there.
Does he just have a cot up there?
I think he has a hammock.
Oh, a hammock.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice little hammock in the lower gondola. But look, Blake Wheeler obviously has been the most successful Winnipeg Jet since the Jets came back. Him and Byfuglien have been together since going back to 2010 when they were in that little state known as Georgia.
Pretty big.
Yeah, it's a pretty big state.
Yeah.
And these guys have a history together. And there has been all types of speculation about, you know, what maybe has gone on, you know, between Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien and kind of their differing leadership styles, if you'll call it that. And they definitely are differing leadership styles. But at the end of the day, I mean, these guys have a friendship and they have that connection that goes back 10 years.
Well, if you want to hear all of Blake Wheeler, it's available on illegalcurve.com. And he talks about their friendship and he talks about their family's friendship and everything else. Look, he spoke eloquently. He spoke well. You know, like you said, to your point, he didn't say anything that was earth shattering. He talked about, you know, his presence. I mean,
you know, sorry, Drew, to cut you off, but the thing that Blake Wheeler said, and I realize this was something that was repeated a lot on Twitter. I know you saw it, and I think you know what I'm going to say. When Blake Wheeler spoke about Buff and how if his heart is not in it, then you have to respect his decision. And really, that's what it's all about here. We don't know the whole truth. And the reason why we don't know the whole truth, and, you know, I caught the segment, you know, when I was on my trip in Mexico, I was listening to you guys talk about Buff. And the reason why this is such a bizarre, complicated situation is mainly because we haven't heard from Buff. We haven't heard from Buff's agent.
Do you think do you think we're ever going to hear from Buff on this?
We might not. Like
Buff, it wouldn't surprise you if he just went completely AWOL.
I don't think Buff is going to hold a press conference. Well, put it that way. Like, I don't know if he's going to speak, Drew, but like, think about his 8 years in Winnipeg. He rarely spoke to the media, right? And then when he got an A on his sweater, that's when he started to talk to the media a little bit more. Because if you're a captain or you're an associate captain, you have to speak to the media more. But he's a private guy. Like, Buff wants to fish. He wants to be with his family. He wants to be with his friends. The media is not his number one priority. So I don't think, you know, Buff is going to be sitting around in March or April and he's going to be saying, you know, I should probably address the media. Like, that's not his style.
Is it fair to blame someone, blame Buff, blame the Jets organization for how this unfolded? Is it fair to say that somebody holds blame? Or is it just, you know, one of those things that's sort of a bridge too far for you?
I think a lot of people want to blame someone, but this is what my personal opinion is. And you might share this, you might not share this, Drew, but when you talk about this whole situation, and it goes back to what I said before, I mean, there's Buff's side of the story, there's the Jets' side of the story, and then there's the truth somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't know Buff's side of the story, and all of the information that we've been receiving has been coming out of Toronto, right? It's Darren Dreger, it's Bob McKenzie, it's Frank Saravalli, and they've been doing a great job. I mean, the TSN insiders have been doing a great job keeping the hockey world informed of this, but we live in Winnipeg. I mean, Buff has been in Winnipeg, and we still don't really know what's going on, right? Like, you hear he's ice fishing, he's out at Earl's Maine, he's out at Earl's St. Vitale. He's probably gone to all the Earls at this point. But the point is,
he went to Earl's house.
We just don't know the true story. So when you talk about blame, like, if it was a question of, and you were on top of this, I'll give you credit, Drew, when we were talking about this back in October, you know, you were saying this is all about the injury situation. It's all about really, you know, how much money Buff is going to make. And I know that Huss has been talking about this a lot on the afternoon ride. Like, if Buff was done with hockey, why not retire? Well, if you retire, last time I checked, you don't get paid.
I mean, you know, and that's, you know, we've heard that question a lot. Why didn't you just retire as opposed to sort of holding everybody in limbo? And I believe, and this is my belief, I believe that Dustin Byfuglien feels as though his body is injured because of hockey.
Right.
And so his thinking is, I'm not physically able to play, so I deserve to get paid even though I'm not physically able to play. And that's
I think that's justified. Like, in that sense, during this whole process, I've kind of been on Buff's side, not the team side. And I realize that there's this whole issue of the salary cap, and people believe that, you know, by Buff saying that he didn't want to play, it kind of held the Jets hostage with that salary cap space. But really, Dustin Byfuglien was just looking after himself. Like, I don't think for a second that Buff said, screw the team. Like, he's not that type of guy. Well, I think that he, like you said.
So what would you say to people?
He wanted his surgery so he could fix his ankle, and he wanted to spend that time recuperating, rehabilitating, and then he wanted to come back. And the Jets, obviously, and their medical staff, from what we've heard, I mean, that's the thing. We don't know kind of what the timeline is. That's the issue. The timeline is very fuzzy.
So for the people who would say Dustin Byfuglien quit on the Jets, is that too far for you? Is that an inappropriate statement? Because there's a lot of people.
I don't think that's at all true. I don't think it's at all true because.
Is that too simplistic?
It goes back to what you said before. Dustin Byfuglien and his team, his agent, you know, the doctors that he was going to see, they believed that he suffered an injury over the course of playing last year that needed surgery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the only reason why this whole situation happens. It just doesn't make any other sense. Why don't you just retire, or why don't the Jets place you on LTIR? Obviously, the Jets medical team had a different opinion. Like,
does the Jets organization?
I don't think that Buff one day just woke up and said, "I don't want to play hockey anymore. I don't care about the Jets."
Does the Jets organization need to wear some of this? You know, you have an asset.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, I don't think this is one sided. Like, I think that there was a breakdown. There was either a communication breakdown or there was a process breakdown in terms of a difference of opinion.
I think the communication breakdown that you just mentioned is key. I think if the lines of communication are what they need to be between both sides, not necessarily saying it's a True North problem or it's a Byfuglien and his representative problem. It's probably both of their problems. They probably both wear egg on their faces for this. If the lines of communication are better, this probably never gets to this point. And that, to me, is where the organization deserves some of the criticism. And you ask most people and they would criticize Buff, I think, before the organization. And I do think that True North the Jets organization needs to have some degree of criticism leveled at them for having an asset, which Dustin Byfuglien is, having an asset be so be so upset with the organization that this is the decision that he made. If the lines of communication are better, then I think this doesn't get to this point in time. I don't know who to blame for the lack of communication, probably both sides. But I do think that there's an element of that the organization has to wear.
And it's almost reached the point where the blame doesn't even matter. Like, the worst part of this is that Buff's career with the Jets specifically is over. We don't know if his career in the NHL is over. It could be. Maybe Buff decides to sign with another team. But for a guy that was the most popular, maybe Winnipeg athlete ever.
Yeah, it is sad.
Right? Like, he's up there with Timu Solani. He's up there with, you know, the greatest Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Goldeyes, like Bobby Hull. Like, you're talking about the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Byfuglien is in that class with Solani and Hull and Dale Hawerchuk. But for this to be the way that his career or his time with the Jets ends is really a shame.
I would agree with that. When we come back, more on Dustin Byfuglien, we talk about what the Jets do with the cap space. I'm going to ask you, Ezzy, when you come back, does Dustin Byfuglien play in the NHL again? Think about that question. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. What are you going to most remember about Dustin Byfuglien and his era as a member of the Winnipeg Jets? We also want to hear from you via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. When we come back, more on Dustin Byfuglien. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, I mean, he has to try. That has to be top priority, but it's a tough time of year to do it, right? You know, adding a defensive piece like that is like adding a one or a two center. It's next to impossible to do that, this time of year, or even at the trade deadline. Guys try, and I'm sure Shoveldayoff will try.
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger on with Huss and Rick earlier this week talking about what the Jets might do with their newfound cap space with the Dustin Byfuglien contract termination supposed to happen. Hasn't happened yet. Maybe we're all just putting the cart before the horse. Wouldn't that be a little bit of an interesting wrinkle if all of a sudden that never came to fruition? In any event, the Jets are going to have plenty of cap space ahead of the upcoming trade deadline, which is a little more than 2 weeks away. It is 2 weeks plus 2 days from now, Monday, February 24th. Coverage all day long here, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. We're asking you as part of the IC question of the day, what is your favorite memory of Dustin Byfuglien as a member of the Winnipeg Jets organization? You can send us the comments at Illegal Curve on Twitter. You can also do so via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Getting a lot of good comments coming in. Rob says that, the memory of September 20th, 2011, which was the first Jets exhibition game, Byfuglien rattling the Blue Jackets on that first shift that he came out and threw his body around, and all of a sudden we knew what the presence was about Dustin Byfuglien. So keep your comments coming, and thanks to everybody, of course, who's also wishing us a happy anniversary. We're celebrating 11 years on Winnipeg Radio with the Legal Curve Radio. February 4th, 2009 was when the show first premiered, so we're up to 11 years plus 4 days.
Do you remember who our first two guests were?
Whew, I don't. I'm sure we have it somewhere, but I don't remember.
So our first guest was David Staples of the Edmonton Journal.
Okay.
Longtime Oilers writer.
Still writing for him.
Really, really good writer, good guy. And our second guest was none other than Stanley Cup champion Patrick Sharp.
No, second guest, not on the different programs, though. Patrick Sharp was what, the second episode we had?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, okay,
the
sorry.
First two guests.
I understand. Yeah, David Staples on the first show, Patrick Sharp on the second show.
I mean, we started the show off with a bang. We had Bobby Clark on the show.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Not too long after we started the show, we had Theo Fleury on. But 11 years, man.
I know.
Like, how have we been able to handle each other?
Oh, I can't stand you. Well, what do you mean? Well, what are you talking about? I absolutely can't stand you.
Like, people don't get that. Like,
we hate each other.
We do the show on Saturdays, but we're not joking when we say this. Like, we don't talk to each other.
Oh, God, no. You and Dave have been fighting for the last, 10 years.
It's true.
I know. It's really quite unfortunate. Used to be friends. Now, mortal enemies. Yep. Except for Saturday mornings from 9 o'clock till noon. Anyways, let's get back to the Dustin Byfuglien talk. A lot of good comments coming in. We'll get to them throughout the course of the show. This cap space. And I know that people are saying, well, now that the Byfuglien situation has been resolved, the Jets can figure out their cap space. Like I said, 2 weeks plus 2 days away from the trade deadline. Do you envision them using this cap space all of a sudden this year to make a big splash? Or is this just an opportunity to maybe shore up something on the blue line in a push? The playoffs.
Before we get into what the Jets may or may not do, this is going to be a very interesting trade deadline for me, because is it just me or has it been eerily quiet? Like, we had the Taylor Hall trade, 2 months ago, right? Like, the big trade between the Devils and the Coyotes. But it seems like, with the exception of very minor moves, is Jack Campbell a major move? Like, to me, that's a minor move.
Based on the coverage of it, you would think it was Gretzky being traded to the Kings again.
Yeah, exactly. But when you're talking about like Jack Campbell, really good goalie, right? Like, former first round pick. And the Leafs had to do that, right? Like, they needed to shore up their goaltending.
Did you see the fourth goal that Michael Hutchinson gave up against the Rangers?
I felt bad for Hutch.
I sort of feel bad. I felt bad for it, too.
Before that, he was playing really well. Like, he won four starts in a row, I think, and he was playing some really good hockey for the Leafs. But, yes, that game against, who was it, the Rangers?
The Rangers.
That was a really,
it was a tough one.
The Rangers. So, the point is that there haven't been very many major moves aside from that Taylor Hall trade to Arizona. But when you talk about the Jets, that's obviously the big $64,000 question, right, Drew? Are the Jets going to use that cap space in the next 2 weeks, or is Chevy going to wait till the summer to use that cap space? And I think a lot of the answer to that question, I should say, has a lot to do with the next 3 or 4 games, right?
From now until the trade deadline, you have 9 games.
Right.
And we're going to talk about those 9 in more detail. But out of those 9, they're all against non-playoff teams,
right,
with the caveat being that the sure. Flyers are bouncing in and bouncing out.
Yeah, and the Hawks are still a team that can make the playoffs.
Certainly. They're in right. the race. With, you know, the Jets have the Hawks this Sunday, and then they have them next Sunday as well.
Yeah, but when you're talking about Ottawa and San Jose and L.A.
and the Rangers, right. these are all teams that are,
they're done.
More or less pretty much done. I mean, if the Jets, over the next nine games, go on a run, and I'm not talking about a 5-2-2 run.
No, we're talking about 6-3-1.
Not even. I'm talking
7-2.
It's got to start with a 7, as far as I'm concerned. It's the only way that you change your philosophy entering the trade deadline is if you win 7 of your next 9. If you go 7-1-1, or if you go, you know, 8-1, maybe it changes your strategy because you begin to look at your roster.
I think it comes down to if the Jets are within 1 point or 2 points of a playoff spot, like either way. Like, I think if they're in a playoff spot or they're 1 or 2 points out, I think they make a trade.
I don't think they make a trade if they're out of the playoffs. I think they have to
be. By 1 point?
I think if they're in a playoff, if you're out of the playoffs by 1 point over between now and the trade deadline, you haven't really accomplished anything. You haven't moved the needle at all. That's where you are today.
Right, but I think it's going to be very hard to move the, like, even if the Jets go 7-2,
yeah.
I don't think they're going to be 5 points ahead of the next team. Like, Nashville has those games in hand. Mm-hmm. And all of these other teams, like you're talking about Calgary, you're talking about Arizona,
yeah,
you're talking about Vegas, Edmonton. Like, I don't necessarily know that the Jets are going to be free and clear of the rest of the pack. So all I'm saying is I think the only way the Jets aren't a possible player at the trade deadline is if they go 3-6 or 4-5.
I think they have to, and from my opinion, I think they have to be more firmly in a playoff spot where they could see their ceiling as being something other than first round playoff fodder.
Well, do you think that if the Jets go 7-2,
yeah.
okay, if the Jets win 7 of 9 games against non-playoff teams, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, do you think that makes them more of a playoff contender? Because I don't think it does. I think right now I think the Jets are a very good team. Like, I think the Jets will make the playoffs, by the way.
Okay.
I picked them to make the playoffs the season. I'm going to stick with that. And I think when you look at the strength of schedule, it gets very hard in March. Like, March, the Jets have 13 games, and we'll get into this later. But in March, the Jets have 13 games, 7 at home, and only 3 of the 13 are against non-playoff teams.
Well, that's why you have to make your hay right now.
Right. So what I'm saying, though, is, don't you want to see how they do against better teams, which, you know, they beat St. Louis, they almost beat Boston, they almost beat Nashville. Like, the Jets are playing well right now, certainly better than they were before the break, but I guess my point is,
I think they have to take a step back, and they have to look at it completely without emotion, and they have to look at it and say, what do the underlying numbers show? Here's our record. Here's where we are in the standings. What do our underlying numbers show? Do our underlying numbers show that we are something better than we have been this entire season? Because we know that the underlying numbers.
Well, if you're looking at them now, then
I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about 9 games from now. I'm talking right before the trade deadline. You know, on the Saturday or the Sunday, which is when they usually hold scouting meetings right around sort of right before the trade deadline. They have to take a step back and say, have we changed the flow of our season? Have we changed the talking points? Have they changed, you know, the underlying numbers of our season so that we now have a higher ceiling?
But if you're looking at 55, how many games have the Jets played? 55, 57?
55.
So you're looking at 55 games. The Jets are bottom 5 in the league in creating high danger chances.
Yes.
And they're bottom 5 in the league in allowing high danger chances.
Yes.
So you're going to take 9 games versus 55 games.
You make a very valid point. I'm just saying from a buyer's perspective. I mean, I'm talking about, this is easy enough for you and me to say because we don't have to stand before the players and say, no, we don't believe in you guys.
Right.
Because if they don't do anything, that's basically what you're saying is we don't believe that this team is good enough that we need to inject it with talent for this season.
Well, and that's why I don't think the Jets are going to be a buyer or a seller. Everybody wants a team to be a buyer or a seller. Obviously, the last 2 years, when you go out and you get Kevin Hayes and Paul Stastny, you're clearly a quote-unquote buyer. But this year is a different situation because as opposed to the Jets being a top team or a second-place team in the Central, they're a wild card team back to, you know, you go back mm-hmm. to 2015, right? So, like, Are the Jets going to make moves similar to Lee Stempniak, Jurie Tolusti, and Jay Harrison? Like, obviously, you know, those are players that it's tough to find comparables for. But I agree with you, Drew. I think if the Jets go 5-4, 6-3, whatever, I think they can easily go 6-3 or 7-2. But I think when you're talking about this next stretch, I think if the Jets are, let's say they're 3 points ahead of the next team in the wild card race, right? Because that's what you were saying.
Yeah.
You want the Jets to be firmly in a playoff spot to really know whether they should add an asset. So I still think, though, that asset is going to be probably a depth defenseman or a third or fourth. Like, I don't think the Jets are going to bring in a player that's going to move the needle.
I think if the Jets can establish themselves in a playoff spot, and it's a huge if, because I've, you know, we've watched them for this entirety of the season. If they can establish, in an ideal world for the Jets, they establish themselves in a playoff spot, the Calgary Flames fall out of a playoff spot and have some sort of collapse, thereby making one of their rental defensemen more available. Travis Hamonic, come on down. That's the kind of move I could see. That would be, I think, an ideal situation for the Winnipeg Jets to have something like that happen.
The only problem is, doesn't Calgary want to acquire a defenseman at this point?
If they collapse. I'm saying if they collapse. If in conjunction with the Jets going on a streak, another team that has obvious rental candidates collapses, sure, that would be, I think, the time that the Jets would maybe consider a purchase.
Yeah, and it's a fair point. And, you know, when I look at some of the defensemen that are being bandied about, like an Alec Martinez, right? Like, Alec Martinez is a good defenseman. He can play in your top four.
But both sides in your top four. He's comfortable on the left and the right.
All due respect, Drew, he's not going to make the Jets a Stanley Cup contender. He makes you better, but are you going to tell me that the Jets are now just as good as St. Louis or Colorado?
No, I'm not, but any sort of injection of talent could...
I think it'll help. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is I just don't think that these next nine games will show that the Jets are a Stanley Cup contender, and then therefore they'll acquire a piece and make them even better, and then we'll say, like, if the Jets were to acquire,
I'll tell you, I mean,
you know, a Chris Kreider, and
it's not going
to
happen.
Well, I realize that. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't think the Jets are going to be a quote unquote buyer like they were with Hayes and, you know, the seven trades they made last year. That's all I'm saying. And again, I'm not trying to be negative here. I think the Jets will make the playoffs, and they might not. But all I'm saying is I just don't believe that the talent that they have this year, especially on the back end, makes them a Stanley Cup contender. I'll take last year's defense, and then I'll call that team a Stanley Cup contender. But this year's defense, even if they acquire a guy like Alec Martinez, I just don't think it's good enough.
When we come back, I want to tell you why I think they're intrigued to maybe become a buyer. And it has a lot to do with the line of Harkins, Kopp, and Roslovic. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
For Coffee to wear the slot, he'll work his way into the corner to the far side, and some checking. Back out in front for Harkins, with a shot. No, he scores! Jansen Harkins with his first in the National Hockey League. And Winnipeg will open up the scoring. It's 1-0 for the Jets.
Jansen Harkins, his first career NHL goal Thursday night in St. Louis. Nice shot. Not sure what Jordan Binnington was quite doing on the play. He seemed like he was deep in his net and almost... It was a great shot. Don't get me wrong. You know, picking the corner, short side. But Jordan Binnington certainly looked awkward on the goal.
Jansen Snipens.
Oh, nicely done. I was going to say...
I stole that from Scotty Billick.
Oh, okay. That's good. At least you gave him credit.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not really stolen at that point in time. It's just giving him credit. Last segment, we were talking about, you know, the Jets as buyers, the Jets as standing pat for the trade deadline. The only reason I think the Jets could consider themselves as buyers...
Is because of Jansen Snipens?
No, but it has something to do with that. If, let's say, the Jets go on that run that we're talking about over the next nine games. And I know people are listening and saying, what evidence do you have that the Jets are going to be able to go on any run? And that's a fair comment because they haven't done it at all this year. But hear me out. Let's say the Jets go 7-1-1, 8-1 between now and the trade deadline. And they're looking at their forward group. And obviously we know what they have at the top six. And then they look at this third line as of late, the Harkins, Kopp, and Roslovic line, and say, hey, that line's been doing pretty well. And then they think about what they have on the IR with Adam Lowry scheduled to come back sometime in the next, you know, probably before the end of the month.
Yep.
and they think about Matthew Perreault.
Yep.
Scheduled to come back sometime before the end of the month. And they think about Brian Little. And we don't know his schedule yet. We know he's skating. But as Paul Maurice alluded to in his or as he said in his comments yesterday, and they're available at illegalcurve.com, he said that Brian Little's injury is not a traditional injury where, you know, you sprain your ankle and then the ankle heals. It's, you know, he compared Brian Little's injury to being involved, the trauma of being involved in a car crash.
Well, Little might come back, but we also might find out later this month or in March that he's shut down for the year.
I could see it go either way, certainly.
Which is just awful because the Jets could use him right now.
But hear me out. Let's say he does come back.
Yep.
And he comes back a month from now. All of a sudden, the Jets forward group of the top six that we know about, the third line of Harkins, Kopp, and Roslovic, and a fourth line or a 3B line of Little, Lowry, and Perreault. It's a fairly formidable forward group.
If you had Brian Little, Matthew Perreault, and Adam Lowry on your fourth line, you would have one of the best fourth lines in the league.
And then the today's fourth line, Shaw, Shore. Who else am I missing?
Gabriel Bork. Yeah, those guys wouldn't be playing.
Those guys are they're in the press box. They're in the moose. They're wherever.
Right.
But all of a sudden, if that's your
Mason Appleton has to be brought into that conversation.
Oh, because Appleton's in the top six.
Well, I don't know. Is he going to stay there?
Right now, the way he's played the last couple games, he looks like he's turning a bit of a corner on a season.
Yeah, but when Matthew Perreault and Adam Lowry come all I'm saying is there is a chance.
Yes, that he could go down.
A guy like Mason Appleton's either on your third or fourth line. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying you have 12 forwards that you're thinking to yourself, hey, this is a pretty good 12-man forward group.
Well, and the Jets have always had, like, none of these guys have been acquired this year. Like, the Jets have had so many injuries that Andrew Kopp's been out of the lineup. Mason Appleton's been out of the lineup. We just talked about Lowry and Perreault, like Little. Like, that's the point here, is that the Jets have always had this good top 12. It's that all year long there have been at least one or two guys out of the lineup.
But my point is, if you finally get to a point where you have that top 12 and you're playing some good hockey and you say, you know what, one defenseman, whomever it is, really goes a long way to shoring up the blue line.
That still doesn't make them a Stanley Cup contender. You think if the Jets are completely healthy and then they bring in an Alec Martinez, they're a Stanley Cup contender?
I don't know that they're a Stanley Cup contender, but I don't think that they're necessarily first-round fodder.
I didn't say that.
I know you didn't, but I'm saying, and once you're not first-round fodder, you might as well be a Stanley Cup contender.
Well, I don't agree with that.
Well, last year, we saw with the Blues. And now I know the Blues had a great roster on paper, but when the playoffs started,
the Blues were the best team in the league in the second half.
I know.
The Jets are not the best team in the second half.
I agree, but if they start to go on a run and if they can get that 12 healthy and they can shore up the defense and you have Connor Hellebuck.
That's a lot of ifs.
I know it's a lot of ifs. You know, and I know that I sound pie in the sky. I totally acknowledge that I probably sound a little bit like I've been taking the funny pills this morning.
What kind of pie? Apple?
I enjoy a good apple, yeah. But I know that I sound a little bit crazy. I'm just saying I think I could see the logic in the Jets organization. If the underlying numbers over the next nine games improve dramatically, add a defenseman, all of a sudden you got guys, you know, you have more depth on your blue line, you have more confident players on your blue line. Why not us is what I could see the logic being inside the organization.
And like I said last segment, I think the Jets, I'm gonna go on the record and say that I think the Jets are going to make the playoffs.
You've said that.
I picked them before the year.
Yeah.
I was a lot more optimistic about that defense. I don't want to toot my own horn, but if you go back to the Jacob Trouba trade, I was saying this is actually a pretty good trade for the Jets. Everybody gave me a lot of flack for saying that Neil Pionk could be a good top four defenseman. That's all I'm saying. So I'm a glass half full guy when it comes to the Jets, but all I'm saying is I think there's a lot of things that have to happen in order for the Jets to be a playoff contender and not just a playoff team. And I do think they are going to make a move or two at the trade deadline. I just don't know if bringing in, you know, an Alec Martinez or you know, a depth forward is necessarily going to turn them into Stanley Cup contender. Just because of the way they've played up until this point, you know, they're a 500 team.
When we come back, Paul Edmonds joins us to set up this afternoon's game against the Ottawa Senators and much more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290. Our buddy Paul Edmonds is going to join us momentarily. We think we know how to use phones, but sometimes we're not quite sure. We'll get that worked out, and we'll get Paulie on for you momentarily. I think that's probably been the consistent thing over the last 11 years, an inability for us to properly use a phone.
Well, I remember back in 2013 when we were doing the show. The NHL draft was in New York, and remember, we broadcasted live from the NHL store on Avenue of the Americas. No big deal.
No big deal.
And I think you were here.
I was here at the studio.
And I think we were like off air for like a good hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, there's something happened then. Exactly. We, you know, technology. It's a wonderful thing when it works.
And it's live radio, right? So people don't realize like things happen.
Yeah.
And the show must go on, right? So sometimes you don't get guests or the phones aren't working. But I know that Paulie's on the line now. So
there you go. Exactly. Sometimes things work. Sometimes things don't work. But in any event, Paul Edmonds is going to join us talk about this afternoon's game against the Ottawa Senators. It's crucial for the Jets to get this homestand off to a good start. I mean, you remember last year when the Jets and the Sens were even worse last year than they are this year. You remember that they lost at home to the Ottawa Senators. I believe it was in overtime, but nonetheless, you cannot lose to another one of the bottom feeding teams in the NHL like the Jets have done on different occasions this season.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program somebody who knows how to use a phone, because that's our inability. Paul Edmonds joins us on the line. Paulie, good morning. How are you?
Not bad, actually. I have some culpability in this.
Oh, dear.
I sent Ezzy the wrong phone number.
You don't know your own phone number?
Well, you know, it is 8 in the morning, and I'm not used to getting up this early.
This is sort of like when in Old School, if you ever saw Old School, where Will Ferrell's character, Frank Ricard, forgot his own birthday.
Well, truth be told, I told Sean Assor. Maybe I didn't really want to do the interview this morning.
That's perfectly. Hey, every time you acknowledge us, that in and of itself is a surprise.
So Paulie, when you have all those burner phones, it's understandable that you're going to give out a few wrong numbers, right?
Indeed. Like, I can't keep up, really, to be honest with you. But it's easier doing that than managing the burner accounts on Twitter.
Well, of course. You know, we know how many of those you have. Paulie joins us to talk about the Winnipeg Jets and the home game this afternoon against the Ottawa Senators. You know, Paul, we spent a lot of the first hour or so of the show talking about the Jets' record and what it needs to be over the next six games, over the next nine games, certainly a soft spot in their schedule. So from your perspective, Paulie, what does the Jets' record need to be over the next nine to really affirm themselves in a playoff spot or in the heart of the playoff race before the trade deadline?
Well, I'll kind of reduce it before I give you a number and tell you that right now they're on where in three games they've accumulated points in all three, okay? So they're 2-0-1 in their last three. That's a good start. I would tell you that they're going to require a couple, maybe three more wins in a row here to get back above the line. You look at that bunch and you've got four, five teams within 2 points of that last wild card spot. I mean, Minnesota beats Dallas last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that situation and you look literally, and I know it's cliche, but it's one game at a time, and what you're trying to do is add on if you're the Winnipeg Jets. Realistically, on this six-game homestand, let's just take it to that, because this is where it really starts for the Winnipeg Jets, guys, and that is that they have not been very good at home since last March, frankly. I mean, they're seven games under 500 since last March, including playoffs at home. That's not good enough. So you look at this six-game homestand, and you've got to win 4 to 5 games. You need points in 5 of these games for sure. Can you have an outright loss? I guess so. Would you like to run the table? For sure. But at the same time, when you look at the quality of opponent, the way the Winnipeg Jets are playing, the way they're playing the game with the zeal that they're having right now, you need to be 4-1-1 by the time you come out of this, if not better. Now, Paul did say yesterday that they're not a playoff team either, so they can't expect to just kind of open the doors for their players and have the opposition come out and the fans will kind of propel the Winnipeg Jets to a victory here. That's not coming. That's not going to happen. But having said that, I mean, in terms of a hard number, you need four outright wins here, if not five on this homestand to really kickstart what you want to be a solid last 2 months, month and 3 weeks, if you will, and a run to the playoffs here. There's nothing short of that, I think, will help your cause, because nobody else seems to be losing in and around that bunch that are chasing the same spot that you are.
Paulie, I know you've been talking a lot about that Jets third line here on the station, and you know we were talking about Jansen Harkins and Andrew Kopp and Jack Roslovic a couple of segments ago, and obviously Harkins gets his first NHL goal, you know, picks up an assist on Andrew Kopp's goal, and that third line has been really playing well since the player and All-Star break. And you know, when you look at the top six and how they've been carrying the offensive load all year long, just how important is it going to be, you know, for that third line to continue contributing? Obviously, we expect the big boys like Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor, Blake Wheeler, and Nikolai Ehlers. We expect these players to start putting the puck in the net. But just how important is it for Paul Maurice to have that line going with all of these really important points on the line?
Well, for a multitude of reasons. Number one, Ezzie, I mean, they contributed to the win pretty much outright the other day because that line scored two goals, right? Nikolai Ehlers gets an empty netter. That was good for him. He hadn't scored in 10. But the way they're playing and how hard they are, and there's that youthful enthusiasm and exuberance, if you will, on that line, I think from the standpoint that Paul's starting to get some trust in them as well. So he can put them in a line matchup situation. Maybe not against the other team's top line, but certainly against the second or third line, I think. You're not going to get caught out there with them on the ice. Andrew Kopp is one of the most defensively responsible forwards the Winnipeg Jets have, and it just happens that he's adding a layer of offense to his game in the last couple of years, and he's making other teams this year, or other players on his team, better this year, other line mates. And I mean, Jansen Harkins, this kid for me right now, he had the skill, he had the speed, he had the quickness. We didn't really see it at this level when he started, but all of a sudden there's some confidence that's come in. And as a result of that, you're seeing him be quicker on the puck, faster, and overall the skill set is starting to really shine out. And now he's got a couple of points, he gets his first NHL goal, and that line is feeling really good about themselves right now. And then it's taken Jack Roslovic to another level. He's at a career high for goals. It seems like he's really comfortable playing with Andrew Kopp. For whatever reason, these guys, these 20-somethings, are kind of rolling along, and they are a bit of a band of brothers, if you will, from that standpoint. They're going to be very important to the Winnipeg Jets in this homestand, because I don't expect that Adam Lowry is coming back in the next couple of days, nor is Brian Little. So what you see is what you're going to get. And what you get right now, or are getting out of that line, you want the same thing for the next six games, or you want a little bit more. So the importance, I think we can't stress enough, of that line right now to augment scoring, maybe even drive the bus as they did in St. Louis the other night offensively. But it's been a nice little find and package put together by the coaching staff, and these guys seem to have relished in the roles that they're in and who they're playing with right now. And they're as important to the Winnipeg Jets and their success as the Scheifele line is right now, because they're doing the scoring, they're also defending, and they're not getting scored on, and you're certainly having some of those guys kill penalties as well on that line, and especially Andrew Kopp. So their roles have taken more of an importance and an expanded variety here for the Winnipeg Jets. And without them, Winnipeg would be in a little bit more of a hole than they already are, looking up at the playoff line right now.
Paul Edmonds is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Ottawa Senators in a little, about 5 hours' time from now, a 1 o'clock puck drop at Bell MTS Place, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. Paul, is it time for the power play to maybe get a bit of a reboot, switch things up, maybe some new personnel? And secondarily to that, is it maybe time to see that second unit get a legitimate opportunity, given when the first unit has been struggling so much game in and game out to generate and actually score any goals?
Well, you bring up a good point. number one, would I like to see the second unit out a little bit more? Possibly. Yeah, I think that might be the first thing that I would do. I wouldn't change a whole lot up, Izzy, or Ezzy, and I'll tell you why.
That was Drew, so it's okay. We're now mortal enemies.
I was talking to a buddy last night that has a boy named Izzy, so anyway, we're...
Izzy, it doesn't matter. It's all good.
The power play for me would be more problematic if, in fact, it wasn't getting established down in the offensive zone and moving the puck around. If they couldn't get it set up and they were constantly on the retrieve and then having to go back and get it and try to get in the offensive zone, I would have more of a problem than how it exists right now. The things for me on it are Neil Pionk has been a really nice addition to that power play. And if you check, the last time I checked, he does lead the team in power play points. The one thing I'd like to see on an improvement from it would be him to pass the puck with a little bit more velocity and a little bit more accuracy to whoever is on that one-time side. And they've been kind of slotting in line A there on his spot, and then sometimes Scheifele's moved over there. The puck has to move quicker over to those guys. You need a little bit of the element of surprise when that puck slides over quickly. You can't allow that extra half a second for the goaltender to slide over, Drew, from one post to the other to make the save, or for that defenseman to kind of curl over as well from the strong side to the weak side to block the shot. So that would be number one. But I also would tell you that Neil Pionk is only a second-year NHL defenseman. This is not Dustin Byfuglien back there. So there is going to be a little bit of a growing pain with him to really feel comfortable and take ownership of that power play. You know, he doesn't have that booming shot. He's got a pretty good shot to get through, but he doesn't have the threat of that booming shot like Dustin Byfuglien had. So it's a bit of a different personnel there. So I wouldn't change much on that power play. I don't know if I would kind of throw it all in and take all 10 guys, mix them all up, and come up with two different units. I would say that the one improvement would be a little bit quicker or a crisper puck movement from Neil Pionk over to that side. And I would think that at some point, if you're not getting the juice that you need out of that top unit, then maybe a little earlier in the power play, if you still have the full 2 minutes going, if you haven't scored or taken another penalty, then maybe put out that second unit just for a different look. I'd like to see the second unit get a little bit more time than maybe the last, you know, 30, 35 seconds of the power play. So that would be the tinkering that I would do, but I really wouldn't rip the heart out of the beast right now because it does proficiently move the puck around. They just haven't hit pay dirt with the regularity that I think that the power play probably deserves at some point.
Now, Paulie, just to get back to those forward lines, you know, we talked about the third line, Harkins and Ross Levick and Andrew Copp, but, you know, look at that second line, and obviously, you know, Mason Appleton, you know, gets the big boost going to the second line with the injuries to Matty Perreault and Adam Lowry, and, you know, he scores that just beautiful goal against the Nashville Predators. Just absolutely love that goal driving the net, but, you know, we were talking about it earlier, you know, Perreault and Lowry are going to come back in the next, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks. What have you seen out of Mason Appleton that maybe makes you think that he could stick on that second line, even with Perreault and Lowry back in the lineup?
Quickness. You know, if he continues to do exactly what you said, Ezzy, and drive the net with the puck in straight lines, I don't know how you can take him and put him back onto the fourth line. If you're going to keep the third line as it is, maybe with the Perreault coming back, you know, I don't know how you can switch anything up that way. To me, I think he stays there, and he seems to have made Blake Wheeler a little bit more effective and efficient as well in that position. And let's face it, I mean, Blake's done a yeoman job here in moving into the middle, but the faceoff percentage has started to drop, and I'm wondering if it's starting to wear on him a little bit with his speed and his quickness. But you've got a young guy there that's kind of full of it right now that is driving a little bit, and I don't know that you can take him off. I think he's been a real nice compliment for Blake, but he needs to continue to do what he's been doing, and that is take that puck with some authority to the net and make sure that you're driving in straight lines and heading toward the target, which is the opposition net. And from that standpoint, if you continue to do that, Mason Appleton's growth has come a long way. Remember, you know, it didn't really get kickstarted very well this year. He kind of got hurt, and then he floundered around in the lineup, and he was down in the bottom four, and then he kind of came back, and he ended up getting a little bit of penalty kill time, which was good because he started in that role last year as well. They started to develop him there. But I really like the growth and the improvement that we've seen from him, and I don't see a whole big reason why you would sort of switch out him right now with anybody that might be coming back in terms of a Matthew Perreault or even a centerman in Adam Lowry or somebody else that might be coming back. I think that he's been a real good fit with Blake Wheeler, and Wheeler hasn't said much about it, but I don't see Paul Maurice making a change anytime soon with that. It could be coming down the pike, depending on who really comes back and how many guys come back at the same time, but Mason's done a nice job on that second line, if you want to characterize Wheeler's line as that.
Now, Paulie, before we let you go, you know, you spent a few hours at the Manitoba Outdoor Show yesterday. Now, I need to know, are you going to go to Thompson, the Paw, or Flin Flon? Because, as you know, my dad is from Flin Flon, and I believe he is listening right now.
Well, there was a real big push yesterday to kind of promote that area, northern Manitoba. I think that with what I saw yesterday on what it has to offer, it might be a destination for the Edmonds family at some point. Not just the hunting or the fishing, but certainly there's one of the things that intrigued me yesterday was there is a guy that can set up you and your family or you and your group out in the tundra outside of Churchill. There's sleeping quarters and whatnot, and he'll come and wake you up when the northern lights are dancing out there, and he'll tell you how to take appropriate pictures of the northern lights to see them up close and personal, even more so than we do on a real good night here in southern Manitoba. So that's something that intrigued me yesterday. But yeah, they had a good crowd go through there yesterday. I would imagine that today and tomorrow, and I think their doors open at 10 o'clock this morning and tomorrow morning, that you'll get to see a real good you know, outdoor show on a bit of a smaller scale, but there's something for everybody there too. I mean, there was scuba diving and fat tire bikes and scooters and all kinds of ice fishing stuff. So yeah, it was fun to spend a number of hours there yesterday.
Paul Edmonds has got the call of the Jets and the Senators later this afternoon, 1 o'clock puck drop at Bell MTS Place. And of course, he's also an Instagram celebrity. If you want to follow him on social media, you can get to see, I guess, pictures of the Northern Lights at some point in time coming up soon. Paulie, thank you for this, brother. We appreciate it.
Drew, my pleasure. We'll talk to you anytime you guys want.
Absolutely, Ball. Thanks very much, buddy. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Senators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He was really, really good tonight against the St. Louis Blues. And you know, a little bit of history here. These are the two teams that matched up in the playoffs last year in St. Louis on their way to the Cup. But Hellebuyck really balanced. Think of the D he's playing behind on most nights.
I know.
It's been a decimated D. And even the guys that have committed, filled in, Nathan Beaulieu, Tucker Pullman, they've had injuries in that group. So I think what he's done is even more remarkable, as I said, than 2 years ago.
TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin talking about Connor Hellebuyck and his performance on Thursday night against the St. Louis Blues. He was certainly one of the key reasons for the Jets coming away victorious in St. Louis, improving to 2-1-1 since the end of the All-Star break, and 2-0-1 this week against Central Division rivals. Jets in action this afternoon, 1 o'clock puck drop against the Ottawa Senators as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, the start of a 6-game homestand for the Winnipeg Jets.
You know that Dave Poulin is tied for 5th all-time in shorthanded goals?
I didn't. That is a random stat you came equipped with this morning.
He's tied with Yari Curry.
Interesting.
For 5th all-time with 39 shorthanded goals. The players ahead of him, you'd expect, Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, Steve Yzerman, Mario Lemieux, and then you've got Dave Poulin.
He was a good player. That's, you know, there were so many players who had sort of outlandish numbers back in the 80s that you sort of lose perspective, because nowadays we know that, you know, they just don't put up the numbers that they used to. But Dave Poulin was a hell of a hockey player.
Former captain of the Flyers.
That's what I was going to say. Really key member player. Of that Flyers team that, you know, they didn't quite win the cup because they always ran into the to the Oilers a couple times. But he was a key member of
Islanders.
That team. And the Islanders, certainly, but, you know, going back a little bit. But, yeah, no, he was a member of some damn good teams playing out in the Philadelphia area. This segment of the program brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Jets and the Senators, like I mentioned, 1 o'clock this afternoon. Laurent Brossoit getting the start for the Winnipeg Jets. Back-to-back situation, which means it's obviously going to be Connor Hellebuck tomorrow evening against the Chicago Blackhawks. Do you think Paul Maurice gave any thought whatsoever to going back-to-back with Hellebuck today, this afternoon, and tomorrow against the Blackhawks?
It's possible, and I'll tell you why. At least my reason is because you have an afternoon game and then an evening game.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, if you had two evening games or you had two afternoon games in a row,
it's like you have
a little bit of extra time there.
You
right?
have 30 hours between games as opposed to 20 hours between games.
So it's possible that Paul Maurice did consider going Hellebuck back to back, but I'm not at all surprised that he's going with Laurent Brossoit, because obviously Ottawa's the worst team, the lesser of the two teams.
Well, the game against Chicago is certainly more important division game, obviously.
Because that's what you call a quote-unquote four-point game, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going up against a team that is battling for a playoff spot like you are. So not surprised that Brossoit gets the start, but yes, I think it's interesting. I saw that you tweeted that out, Drew, about maybe going with Hellebuck back-to-back, and I thought it was interesting because a lot of the times when you have back-to-back games, especially if it's home and away, you don't even consider riding a goalie twice in a row.
Right.
But because it's a home back-to-back, I think there probably was some thought between Paul Maurice, Wade Flaherty, the coaching staff, maybe going back-to-back with Hellebuck, especially with the way he's played lately, right? And Hellebuck was struggling a little bit, you know, towards the end of December and into January. But, you know, obviously, you know, that last game against St. Louis, he was the first star of the game. And I think this is something that we should probably be talking about as the weeks go on here, and maybe, you know, we can get into this a little bit later on in the show, but Hellebuck should absolutely be in the Hart Trophy conversation. Like, the Vezina to me, like, don't even at tweet me. Like, he is a Vezina Trophy finalist if the season ends today. But he should be in the Hart Trophy talk.
They just we've talked about this on the show. They don't give the Hart Trophy to goaltenders anymore, unless
that's
the goal,
stupid.
Fine, but I mean,
flat out, that's stupid. Like, why shouldn't a goalie win the Hart Trophy? Like, Jose Theodore won the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, but it was I don't dispute your point. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think that was a different era in that it was still sort of the dead puck era, where a goaltender would have a goals against average of 1.78 on the course of an entire season. I just think it's one of those things that...
Look at Hellebuck's war stat. Like, wins above replacement. Like, we've looked at that stat before. Like, Hellebuck is far above anyone else.
I know. Look, I mean, Hellebuck has been incredible. He's been the Jets MVP. There's no question about that. He, if like to your point, if the season ended today, he would be probably win the Vezina Trophy.
Yeah.
But you know, the MVP just doesn't go to goalies anymore. It's just one of those things. I think that's going to be a bygone of a different era in the hockey world.
I think you're right, but I don't want to accept it.
Fair enough.
Like, I think that's what it is, because when you talk about valuable players,
yes,
the goalie is a player.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're talking about, you know, Jordan Binnington wins the Conn Smythe last year. The Conn Smythe is the MVP of the playoffs. It's not MVG of the playoffs. Like, the MVP, the Hart Memorial Trophy, is not most valuable. I can't even say it right now. I'm having trouble with that. Defenseman or forward, right? Like, and it's usually a forward.
I get your point. I understand your point completely. I just don't think it's going to be something that happens anymore. You know, Hellebuck has been great. We know that. It's going to be Brossoit this afternoon. The Jets need Brossoit to be great. He was very good against Boston coming out of the All-Star break. The Jets need him to be that again against an Ottawa Senators team that really isn't a great hockey team, but they play hard. And the Jets need to be able to match that effort. And the Jets need to be able to get out, I think, on a good start against the Ottawa Senators. I think the start of this afternoon's game is absolutely key for the Jets, particularly with a back-to-back situation. If they are able to get off to a good start, if they're able to roll four lines for the entirety of the 60 minutes, that'll certainly help them this afternoon. I think it'll also help them tomorrow against the Blackhawks and maybe having a little bit more energy. Blackhawks traveling to Winnipeg this afternoon. They're not on a back-to-back situation. They haven't played since, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Thursday.
Yep.
So the Blackhawks are going to be rested as they face the Jets tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I mean, we know Ottawa's not a very good team, Drew. I agree with you, but DJ Smith deserves a lot of credit for the job that he's done this year.
Got him playing hard.
He's got them playing hard, but also they've I think exceeded expectations as far as the style that they play and the results they've got. Like, the Senators have lost what, three or four in a row now, but if you look at these games that have preceded the Jets Senators game, the Avalanche game, obviously they won 4-1, but if you look at like the games preceding that, they have been close games. Like, they lost to Anaheim in a shootout, they lost to Toronto in overtime.
They play hard.
Washington beat them 5-3. Like, before that, they beat Buffalo. Like, so this Senators team is a scrappy team. The Jets should obviously beat them, but they're in games.
You have to play hard. You got to have the cliche 60-minute effort against every team in the NHL. The Jets certainly aren't in a position where they can take anyone for granted. Coming up next, Senators play-by-play broadcaster, our colleague on TSN 1200 in Ottawa, Dean Brown, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.